House Committee on Judiciary come to order. Today is May 30th, 2017. We're going to be rolling over some bills, so we're going to be rolling over Senate Bill 95, and we're going to be rolling over Senate Bill 257 and Senate Bill 290 will be rolled over to tomorrow. And I apologize to anybody that's here for those.
I'm sorry, can you repeat that, please?
690.
257. 95. Okay. Open a public hearing on Senate Bill 714. Call Senator Prozowski and Sheriff Meyer, please.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 714A applies to persons convicted of stalking or violating a court stalking protective order and authorizes the court or the agency supervising the person to impose reasonable residency restrictions as a condition of supervision.
Okay, thank you. Please, Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. Thank you very much for giving me the opportunity to say a few brief words on Senate Bill 714. I'm Floyd Prozowski, State Senator, District 4, which includes parts of Lane and Douglas counties. SB 714, as it comes to you, is a bill that's going to allow for judges or the parole board to have some discretion as to residency requirements for individuals that are have been convicted of sex offending. This is a situation that when we had the original bill, it called out for a specific distance to be away from a victim on their request. That seemed to be a situation that was just going to have unintended consequences. So instead of having a fixed distance, this will be allowed for either a judge or for the appeal or for the parole board to be able to set a distance based on the situation that's presented to them. The reason we think that's important is because you can quite easily see smaller communities, you could actually place someone outside of being able to even live within the city limits. And that's why we felt that it needed a little bit more flexibility. There is an amendment that you have not seen yet that is in the process of being worked. And speaking to Josh Nasby, he expects it may be out today or tomorrow. And that bill, or excuse me, amendment would deal with the situations. If you saw the high profile situation that occurred about 3 weeks to a month ago, there's an individual in the course of committing a murder actually was social webbing it out at the time of the murder. This is a situation I think we in Oregon should have a very strong position of zero tolerance. What this bill or what this amendment would do would basically allow for enhancement of the penalties based on someone that was displaying the actual act of killing someone or seriously injuring someone on social media at the time of the act. This is not geared at someone that might be capturing it from a distance. This is a perpetrator who's actually committing the crime of the underlying offense. So that's the two portions that we have before you. Seated to my right is Sheriff Myers from Marion County, who is a supporter of the underlying bill.
Okay, thank you, Sheriff.
Good afternoon, Chair Barker, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Jason Myers. I'm the Marion County Sheriff. I'm here today testifying in support of Senate Bill 714 on behalf of the Sheriff's Association and the Chiefs Association. And I really can't add much more. I really like the amendments that are coming out and the social media issue. This is actually, we had an incident in our community, and Senator Winters and I worked on this bill together along with Senator Prozowski. It was a stalking order where a judge couldn't change where an individual was living, and the stalking order was in a neighborhood with a number of neighbors, and it created a lot of problems. And so this hopefully will be a fix in the future if a person in Oregon finds themselves in a situation that the judge or the parole board has a little more authority to set residency requirements. So thank you very much.
Hey, thank you. And Senator, just could a judge not now enhance the penalty over a, we're talking about Measure 11 crimes?
I believe that they would have the ability, they would have to go through the process of the prosecutor in this case would have to show aggravating circumstances. I believe that a couple of the catches might do this, but this is going to outright call it out and basically set up, and I forget exactly what the sanctions are as to, I think it's up to an additional 3 years of imprisonment based on the conviction for the crime itself and that it was proven in court that they were, at the time of doing it, were doing it for displaying it at the time of the act.
Okay, great. Okay, we'll get that in tomorrow then. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Anybody have any questions for these two? No. Okay, thank you. Thank you.
Thanks.
Lynn Saxon and Mickey Logan, please. Mickey's for questions only, but.
Good afternoon, Chair Barker and members of the committee. I'm Lynn Saxton, the director of the Oregon Health Authority, and with me today is Mickey Logan, the director of legal affairs for the Oregon State Hospital and member of the Oregon Bar. As you may know, the State Hospital Review Panel was created in 2011 under ORS 161327. Similar to the Psychiatric Security Review Board, SHRP determines when and under what conditions Oregon State Hospital patients may be placed in the community after they've successfully pleaded guilty except for insanity, GEI, to a crime. PSRB does this for Tier 1 crimes. SHRP, as it's known, does this for Tier 2 crimes. Tier 1 crimes include all forms of murder, sodomy, rape, assault 1 and 2, robbery, arson, and the like. Tier 2 crimes are all crimes not listed as Tier 1. I'm here today in support of an amendment to Senate Bill 714 that would repurpose SHRP to do a similar task, but for the aid and assist population instead of those found guilty except for insanity. When someone is accused of a crime but found too mentally ill to stand trial, the courts send the defendant to the Oregon State Hospital to be restored to competency. We refer to this population as the 370 population, referring to the statute governing the process, ORS 161-370, or as aid and assist, because these patients are unable to aid and assist in their own criminal defense. Over the years, the number of these patients at the state hospital has continued to climb. In 2011, the average daily 370 census was around 100 patients. In October of 2016, the census peaked at 248 patients. The census has been fairly steady over the last few months at around 190 patients, but in recent weeks, we've seen the trend going back up. Our current census for this category is 200 patients. In the last several years, the state has made investments in community mental health services, including community aid and assist restoration services. Therefore, some nonviolent individuals can be safely restored to the community. At close to $1,000 per day, mostly general fund dollars, Oregon State Hospital is the most intensive and costly level of care in the state for adults. With a limited number of beds, we should reserve admission to OSH to only those who actually need hospital-level care. It is not the appropriate place for people who have been arrested for public urination, general nuisance crimes, or drug-induced behaviors. These people would be better served in a lower-cost setting specific to their needs. As the numbers of aid and assist patients have risen over the years, the result is that people who have been civilly committed end up waiting in the emergency department of our hospitals for weeks before a bed at Oregon State Hospital is available. This ED psychiatric boarding issue could potentially be alleviated as a result of this amendment and other efforts underway. This amendment would make it possible for the court to commit the defendants accused of nonviolent crimes to the Oregon State Hospital and to the State Hospital Review Panel. The judge would indicate in his or her court order that there is no current community placement available for the defendant, but that the defendant can be replaced in the community for restoration services should an appropriate bed become available. Upon assessment, SHRP would then monitor available community services, which the behavioral health mapping tool developed 18 months ago can assist with, and upon availability, order an appropriate placement for that individual's health care needs. If the person requires a hospital level of care, of course, they would remain at the Oregon State Hospital. In addition, this amendment would require several improvements in efficiency and effectiveness. The first is the courts would notify SHRP of upcoming 370 hearings so that a delegate may attend, helping us to have the appropriate wards managed to the appropriate levels, which is an efficiency measure, knowing what the patient profile was going to look like. And second, SHRP would notify the court, the district attorney, and the defense attorney of the defendant's community placement. So all the stakeholders in that individual's placement are informed. Currently, the SHRP consists of a psychiatrist, a psychologist, a probation officer, an attorney, and a member of the general public. We would likely replace the probation office member with a community mental health director from our CMHP system across the state or other professional relevant to this particular population. We're certainly open to working with other stakeholders on this component, which is currently in rule. Because SHRP has a stellar record of successful placements in the community, OHA believes it has the knowledge, skills, and judgment to be able to perform a similar task for patients pre-adjudication. At OHA, our goal is better health, better care, and lower costs. This amendment allows us to potentially achieve this goal for the 370 population and be better stewards of public health care dollars. Indeed, the U.S. Department of Justice has asked us to do this and has asked us to improve our performance within the next 2 years. As such, we would greatly appreciate your support for this amendment. Thank you for the opportunity to testify, and I'm happy to answer any questions you have. Thank you.
Any questions? Okay, thank you very much. Appreciate your testimony. We're going to roll this over till tomorrow and get the paperwork caught up. Close the public hearing on Senate Bill 714. Roll over to tomorrow and open a public hearing on Senate Bill 1055 and call Representative Evans, please.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, Senate Bill 1055 modifies divorce law involving members of the United States Armed Forces. The introduced bill modifies several definitions and allows a deployed parent to seek an order providing visitation with a step-parent, grandparent, or other family member during the deployment. The introduced bill allows the court to enter the order after balancing the interests of the child and the interests of the non-deployed parent if the visitation is in the best interest of the child and would facilitate the child's contact with the deployed parent. There are two amendments posted on OLIS. The -1 amendment replaces the measure and modifies the circumstances under which the court can enter the visitation order. In addition, the -1 amendment makes definitional changes, prevents the court from considering past, present, or future deployment in making certain custody and parenting time decisions, and prohibits the court from modifying certain portions of a divorce judgment less than 10 days before deployment. There's also a -3 amendment that modifies the deployment order by incorporating the third-party visitation provisions of ORS 109-119. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Please. Thank you, Chair Barker, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Paul Evans. I represent House District 20 in the Oregon Legislature, consisting of Monmouth, Independence, West Salem, South Salem. Would it be all right if I invite up Janet and Jennifer, please come forward? Sure. While they're coming up, I'll just give a very brief explanation. I have a letter that I submitted a while back for the record. Senate Bill 1055 is something that, while I was not aware of until this session, I think is one of the more important things we may be able to accomplish this legislative session. I say that because yesterday, like many of you, I was at an event in honor of Memorial Day. I got to hear the 142 names of the Iraq-Afghan Memorial Wall. And for my generation of warriors anyway, it is very strange to have a monument that actually is about a war that is ongoing. And when I served with Governor Kongoski, I went to about 42 of those 142 funerals. I say that because on Memorial Day, many people think about the price and the sacrifice paid. But that's about the folks who did not come home, the folks that are continuing to serve, struggle in lots of ways. And though we have an all-volunteer military these days, what that has meant is that between an all-volunteer military and a federal government that is often budget-constrained, we end up with fighting wars on the cheap. And fighting wars on the cheap means you're using the reserve and the guard more than ever before. And as you know, Oregon, I believe, has had somewhere in the neighborhood of 15,000 deployments over the last many years. We just had a couple over the last several months, one last week. I mention that because this bill is trying to do a very simple thing. Now, there's a -1 amendment, there's a -3 amendment. I think the consensus will be the -3 amendment is the best. But whatever it is, because I'm not a lawyer and I didn't stay in a Holiday Inn, what I do know is the following. I know that parents right now in Oregon have less protection than in 46 other states. 46 other states make sure that military parents have more say over what happens to their children when they're fighting our country's wars than we do, and we can do better than that. and I trust this committee to have the judgment to find the best answer. This bill, I think, at the end of the day, will be one more piece of the message we send to our National Guard Reserve and the active duty that are in the state, that while you're gone, we will not only have your back, but we'll make sure you have still control over how your kids are treated and with whom they're with. So with that, I just ask for passage of this bill in whatever form you believe is best for the job at hand, and I will hand it over to two people that know this issue far better than me.
Okay.
Thank you. Good afternoon. My name's Janet Graham, and I'm kind of the one that brought this issue forward this session. My personal experience was in 2011, I was a member of the Army, and I lost primary physical custody of my child because of my military service. I never deployed. I just left the state, and the Oregon courts basically treated me the same way as an unfit parent. And now I am hoping that we can improve our system and really take care of our soldiers. The goal of SB 1055 is to ensure stability for the children of deployed parents. The bill permits the deployed parent to delegate their parenting time to a family member, such as a step parent, to foster communication with the parent during a deployment. This will also help keep the child in their usual routine when they're already dealing with the stress of a parent being deployed. The last thing that we want to do is rip them from their homes and their schools and where they're familiar. The similar laws have been passed in many states, as Representative Evans has already said. In addition, similar provisions to 1055 have been kind of put together in a uniform law commission document called the Deployed Parents Custody and Visitation Act, which the American Bar assisted in writing, and that act allows for third-party visitation. So it's pretty much a consensus that this is something that we can do, and it would be a great benefit to these families. From what I understand, the Oregon Bar does not oppose the idea of the bill and the intent of the bill. They are concerned with technical aspects of the law, and they recommend the -3 amendment as a way to fix the technical problems that they see with this law. I believe that the -1 amendment is constitutional and would provide the greatest protection for these children. I would rather see this law pass with the -3 amendment this session and provide our soldiers with some sort of protection and peace of mind than leave them high and dry, especially since, like he mentioned, they're deploying right now. This is happening right now. So I want the -1. I think it's the best, but if you are all more comfortable with the -3, let's do it. Do anyone have any questions?
Okay, thank you. Sergeant?
Good afternoon, Chair Barkers and members of the committee. My name is Sergeant Jennifer Turpin, and I'm the Yellow Ribbon Coordinator for the Oregon Army National Guard. In this role, I provide resource support for military members and their families during the deployment cycle to include family assistance, family needs during deployment, employment, education, legal, and much more. I am also a single mother of 3 school-aged children and struggled through custody issues resulting from deployment. I would like to share that story with you today, as well as note that I maintain a neutral stance on Senate Bill 1055. I joined the Oregon Army National Guard when I was 26 years old. At the time I enlisted, my 3 children were 7, 4, and 3 years old. Enlisting was the hardest choice I have ever made, but after a rocky divorce, which included joint custody, I was determined to better mine and my children's situation. The military provided me that opportunity. However, it did come at a cost to my family. Immediately after returning from 6 months of initial training, I was notified that my unit was to deploy within the next 6 months. As scary as that sounded, and as overwhelmed as I was to have to be apart with my children again so soon, I embraced the situation and made the most of each day with them. I, of course, shared this news of the upcoming deployment with my children's father. So many others had offered praise and empathy for what was about to be a tough year for both myself and my children. But he offered words like abandonment and neglect. His words were harsh, but I knew in my heart the choice to enlist was going to benefit my family far more than the time it would take away from us. Shortly after our conversation, I received custody documents. My children's father had filed for sole custody based on the time I had been away for training and the time I would be away on deployment. This was the last thing I needed to focus my time and energy on. Instead of spending maximum amount of time with my children before leaving, I was spending countless hours retaining and meeting with counsel and petitioning my unit to let me appear in person to defend my custody rights. Thankfully, my unit was supportive and arranged for me to fly back to Oregon to attend the custody hearing. During the hearing, the case was dropped due to my children's father not providing evidence that there was a reasonable change in circumstances. Although my situation did have a positive outcome in the end, there was much undue stress and essential training time lost during this timely process. Unfortunately, even though the custody case was dropped, I still continued to have issues throughout my deployment. There was not one time that I spoke to my children while they were in the care of their father during my time away. Thankfully, I had arranged for my mother to have the children during my allotted parenting time so I could reach them during deployment. If not for the time they spent with my mother, I would not have had the opportunity to speak to my children throughout the entire year I was away, which is another component of this bill. In closing, I would like to say that anything you could do to provide support to military members and their families dealing with separation would be positive. Thank you for this opportunity to share my story. I would be happy to answer any questions at this time.
Anybody have any questions for Sergeant?
Chair Barker, members of the committee, if I could just add, I believe the reason that the sergeant is neutral is because the military department has to be neutral. I think the story speaks for itself, and I want to emphasize that it's been a few years since I was in uniform, and when I was, the last thing in the world I wanted my airmen or the Army folks I was working with to worry about was whether somebody back home would steal their kids through a court that just didn't understand or have the power to protect them. And I strongly urge consideration of this measure.
Thank you. Representative Bob.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I, Representative Evans, I wanted to ask you, I'm looking at the dash three versus the original bill, and I think you had said something about the bar had a problem with this one section.
The bar prefers the dash three.
Okay, because of this one section that it would replace.
Is what I'm told.
Are we going to have the bar testify or say anything?
They're here, yeah. Okay.
Because I'd like to hear what the problem is.
And it's great.
In your mind, I'm like you, I'm not a lawyer, but I've watched every episode of Law & Order.
Yeah. Chair Barker, Representative Post, I'm with you on the idea that, again, certified smart people figure out what's the right language, but at the end of the day, when we have kids going downrange, we can fix this.
The bar is signed up to testify.
Okay. Yeah. I'll wait till then.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
That's all. And call Ryan Cardy.
Chair Barker, members of the committee, my name is Ryan Cardy. I am a member of the Oregon State Bar. I'm in private practice here in Salem. My practice is exclusively limited to matters involving family law. That includes divorce, child custody, and parenting time matters. I also have the privilege to serve as the Oregon State Bar Family Law Section's legislative liaison, and I chair the Family Law Section's legislative subcommittee. It is in my capacity with the Oregon State Bar that I appear before you today. Representative Post, I'll be happy to answer your question, and I will address it. Let me first, though, provide some historical context and congratulate the members of this body, this legislative body, because you have done a number of things to help Oregonians who are in our military service. I put together a highlight reel of sorts and I'll share that with you. ORS 107-135 provides that temporary placement of a child by a deployed parent to a non-deployed parent does not constitute a change of circumstances that would trigger a modification. And so my presumption is that the story you heard, the personal story you heard, that's the reason why the court ultimately dismissed that case, because you folks in previous sessions had implemented that law, which is a very good piece of legislation. ORS 107-145 provides that no permanent modifications may be made regarding custody and parenting time generally until 90 days after the completion of a period of deployment. I think that's a self-explanatory and very wise piece of legislation enacted by this body. Additionally, 107-145 provides that the court may enter a temporary order providing for the reasonable accommodation of the circumstances of the deployed parent's deployment in the best interest of the child. Now, that phrase is a little bit vague in terms of what exactly the court may does. I would challenge this body to suggest that courts often wrestle with situations just like what you heard of, and that that statute was drafted intentionally broad and open to provide courts ample room to facilitate difficult family situations. ORS 107-146 provides for not only an expedited hearing upon the request of a deployed parent, but it provides that the court shall, even if no motion has been made by a deployed parent, shall provide for alternate testimony. The story you heard was the difficulty of appearing in person, and this body recognized that in previous sessions and implemented 107-146, which provides the court shall provide for alternate testimony. It goes through to define that as telephone, video, electronic, internet, etc., so that our deployed service members in Oregon are not faced with the very difficult reality of having to appear in court on these sorts of issues. ORS 109-056 provides that a deployed parent can delegate parental powers, including possible delegation to a third party, if the delegation to the non-deployed parent is not in the child's best interest. So that's sort of a highlight reel of past legislation this body has undertaken in order to advance the interests of those Oregonians who serve our military for this country. Those are all positive improvements in the area of law in which I practice daily. Senate Bill 1055 presents another opportunity to improve the state of the law in terms of how courts deal with these very, very difficult situations. To give you a little bit of historical context, the United States Supreme Court decided in a case a number of years ago, Troxell v. Granville, which was a contest essentially dealing with grandparents versus a legal parent. Without getting into the details of that case, because I do not believe it would help this body in making its decision, I will say that the impact of that case was that the Oregon legislature implemented a complete redraft of how we deal with third-party parenting time and custody issues in Oregon. And the results of that redraft are found in ORS 109.119. ORS 109.119 is a statute that deals with how the courts interact when you have a non-parent and a parent engaged in a dispute over custody or parenting time issues. If you look at the Dash 3 amendments that have been proposed, you will see that there is a specific reference directing that the court apply the standards and the requirements set forth in ORS 109.119. The Oregon State Bar believes that is a very critical inclusion in this bill, because the last thing we want to do when dealing with deployed parents and their children is to create any sort of ambiguity in the law. Ambiguity in the law means that judges are unsure how to rule, what powers they have, what outcomes should result. That means that lawyers who are advising these deployed parents are unsure exactly where we are. Is this deployed parent who is trying to delegate his or her authority to a third party falling within the confines of ORS 109-119? The original text of the bill and the Dash 1 amendments do not include that specificity. Or are we taking into consideration those factors For example, in determining whether a child has an ongoing personal relationship with the third party to whom authority, parental authority, is to be delegated. And it's the bar's position that providing that level of consistency, providing that level of structure for these difficult situations is both helpful to the courts and practitioners and appropriate in terms of these difficult cases. To be clear, the ORS 109.119 normally requires that in making an award of parenting time or custody to a third party, that the party bringing the case demonstrate that one or both of the parents are not acting in the best interests of the child. Senate Bill 1055 eliminates that requirement and specifically sets forth that in bringing this suit, presumably the deployed parent, because this is a case where you'd have parent versus parent, delegating to a third party, but it's different than a traditional 109-119 case because in that situation you have a third party bringing suit against one or both parents. So presumably in this dynamic created by Senate Bill 1055, you would have a deployed parent bringing suit against the non-deployed parent, but you do have a third party over here in the wings because the deployed parent is saying, I'd like for my parenting time or some of my authority to be transferred to this person. What Senate Bill 1055 says is that neither parent need prove that the other parent is not acting in the best interests. That's not what this bill is about. This bill is not about proving the other parent is somehow lacking or deficient. Having said that, the Dash 3 amendments do go through and state that the court must consider the other requirements. For example, the ongoing personal relationship requirement. We want the children, if they're to be placed with a third party, to have an ongoing personal relationship with those individuals. And so those provisions would still apply so long as the Dash 3 amendment is incorporated. The Oregon State Bar believes that the Dash 3 amendment provides the most consistent approach in the context of the current law in the state of Oregon, while accommodating the special interests of both service members and their children. The state bar believes that the Dash 3 amendments are the most likely to provide both attorneys and the judiciary a clear approach for evaluating cases and then determining how they ought to proceed in the court system, and that the Dash 3 amendment is the least likely to be challenged from a constitutional perspective. Keep in mind that ORS 109-119 was the product of a very lengthy series of legislative efforts to deal with this difficult area of the law. This body spent a significant amount of time dealing with that issue in the wake of Troxell v. Granville, the United States Supreme Court case, and it's the bar's position that let's leave those parameters in place in dealing with this subset of exactly that sort of issue. I'm happy to answer any questions you might have, and I appreciate the opportunity to be here today.
Anybody have any questions? Well, thank you very much for your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Barker.
I'm more confused.
We're going to close the public hearing and roll that over till tomorrow so we can get the amendments back, get that lined up. Open a work session on Senate Bill 64A.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 64A replaces the phrase mental disease or defect with the phrase qualifying mental disorder. The A in Gross bill contains a preamble describing the legislative intent to eliminate the use of the phrase while retaining the underlying law interpreting the phrase. There is a Dash A5 amendment that deletes the preamble and adopts a statute describing the Legislative Assembly's intent in substituting the phrase qualifying mental disorder for the phrase mental disease or defect.
Mr. Chair, I move the A5 amendments into Senate Bill 64A.
Representative Williamson moves the A5 amendments into Senate Bill 64A. Is there any discussion? Are there any objections? Seeing none, so ordered.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 64A as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Williamson moves Senate Bill 64A as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Again, any discussion? Any objections? Seeing none, so ordered. And Representative Greenlick, would you carry that for us, please?
I'd love to.
Okay, thank you. Open a work session on Senate Bill 492.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 492 addresses divorce judgments in which spousal support is owed and allows one spouse to require the exchange of income tax information once every 2 years.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 492 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Williamson moves Senate Bill 492 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Any objections? Seeing none, so ordered. And anybody like to carry that bill?
I'll take it.
Representative Gorsuch will be our carrier. Thank you, Representative. Okay, open a work session on Senate Bill 898.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 898 provides that legally privileged information and records of a city that are disclosed to an elected auditor for auditing purposes do not lose their privilege as a result of the disclosure. There's a dash A5 amendment that makes two changes to the engrossed bill. First, the amendments limit the application of the bill to materials that are protected by the attorney-client privilege or the attorney work product doctrine. And second, the amendment clarifies that the bill only applies to material for which the city holds the privilege and would not apply to material for which an individual or an entity other than the city holds the privilege.
Mr. Chair, I move the dash A5 amendments into Senate Bill 890A.
Representative Williamson moves the dash 5A5 amendments into Senate Bill 890A. Discussion. Any objections? Seeing none, so ordered.
Chair, I move Senate Bill 890A as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Representative Williamson moves Senate Bill 898 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Again, any discussion on that? Any objections? Seeing none, so ordered. Representative Williamson, would you like to carry your city's bill?
I would love to. Great.
Okay, thank you. Further? Yeah, we won't. Okay, just to be safe, we'll once again state the rollovers for tomorrow. We'll be hearing the end of Senate Bill 1055, Senate Bill, I crossed them out.
95.
714.
Yeah. 95, Senate Bill 714, Senate Bill 257, and Senate Bill 690. We stand adjourned. Thank you, committee.
Thank you.